I didn't even realize I was wasting $415 a month until I downloaded Rocket Money. I thought I had my finances under control until the app laid out all my spending and categorized it for me. Takeout, shopping, and unused subscriptions were quietly draining my account. And as a result, my savings took a back seat. But Rocket Money doesn't just tell you what you're wasting money on. It takes action to save you money. First, the app looks at your income and monthly expenses and calculates how much you can safely spend each day to stay under budget. Rocket Money also finds and cancels unwanted subscriptions for you and even negotiates better rates on your bills so you have more money in your pocket. On average, Rocket Money members can save up to $740 a year when using all the app's premium features. Users love the app with over 186,000 five-star ratings. It's time to simplify your finances and take control of your money. Go to rocketmoney.com/cancel to get started. That's rocketmoney.com/cancel. rocketmoney.com/cancel.
Yes, welcome back inside the Quicken Loan Studios at YSR, and the countdown is on, and the 2014 Major League Baseball season, the regular season that is, it is coming to a close. That means the playoff picture is now coming into focus, and with us in studio is our very own Andy Pondillo at YSR, our producer of the Big East Sports Show, to discuss the 10 playoff teams and what we can watch for. But before, Andy, we hit on the playoff picture tonight. It is the end of the Derek Jeter era, and so much for a fairy tale ending. How will you remember Derek?
Well, I'm never going to remember him for all the playoff moments. I mean, this guy comes up as a youngster, 1996, wins his first World Series. He looks just like a kid out of high school, basically, going out there and competing with the best, and it seems like he never stopped. All those division titles in a row. Out of all the seasons he played, 20 seasons, he didn't go to the playoffs only two times. That's going to go down in history. It's going to be very hard for anyone to challenge that. Derek Jeter, you got to think of him as a playoff guy, Mr. November, the big home runs, the big defensive plays that he made, the play at the plate against Oakland, everybody remembers. So there's so many moments to go around, and you just have to feel that he's going to stay in the game. It's somehow, whether it's commentary, whether you see him on ESPN, you'll see him doing something because he's married to baseball.
You know, I have to wonder, too, what was the key to his longevity in the game? I mean, here, Andy, he's 40 years old. He played over 140 games this season. That's incredible.
I think he stayed true to himself, and you look at a lot of these guys, and especially in the era he played, we noticed the PED era where he's seen a lot of guys max their stats out for one, two, three seasons. But at the same time, when you get your body bulky like that, and you just try to build upper strength, and you're playing shortstop, you're way too big than you need to be. It seems like those types of guys, I'm not a scientist, but it seems like they go down with injury a lot easier than someone who's lean, you know, a solid 190, a solid 200. And Derek Jeter, I feel like he always kept the same weight, the same frame throughout his career, and he knew who he was as a hitter. He didn't try to go above and beyond. He was consistent, and there's something to be said about baseball players that are consistent. We see guys all the time who are flashy, who have those 1 to 2 years, get a big contract, and you never hear from them again. Derek Jeter, every single year, was a productive player.
Okay, but why did the Yankees struggle so much this year? I mean, there's a bunch of no names in the lineup. What was the deal there?
The Yankees foundation is an absolute mess right now. There is no money they can spend. There's no draft prospect they can bring up that's going to fix this problem immediately. Sure, I think they can stay within that 81, 85 win marker, but it's going to be hard to win the AL East with their current setup. They're going to have to make some dramatic moves. They did that with Jacoby Ellsbury. They did that with Brian McCann, but that just makes the team a little top-heavy. Top-heavy teams sometimes can compete. Top-heavy teams even sometimes can sneak into the playoffs, but top-heavy teams don't win World Series championships. The only way they're going to get better, in my opinion, is if they are to sell. That's against what the Yankees do. I don't know if they're ever going to sell because they just have so many problems. They have it with the starting pitching. They have it with the relief pitching. The bottom of the order is one of the weaker bottom of the orders in the American League. So there's just a lot of problems with that team. I don't know how you solve it. The only way I can think of is you trade some of your bigger guys and you get a band of prospects for them.
Well, it is tough not seeing the Yankees. They will not be in the postseason, but teams that are for sure in, I've got down the Cardinals, the Pirates, the Dodgers, Giants, and the Angels and the Orioles.
Yes, it's going to be a lot of fun to watch how this final weekend plays out. I think I know how it's going to play out.
Okay, talk to me. How is it going to play out, Andy?
Well, we've seen surprises before, so I don't want to sit here and, you know, lock certain teams in certain spots. You know, you think the Cardinals are going to win the NL Central, but they could get swept at the end of the year, and the Pirates could win the NL Central, then put the Cardinals in a wild card game. I feel like we got the teams, though, for the most part, in place. Who's going to go in with the home field advantage? Should be interesting to see. Is that going to be the Nationals? Is it going to be the Dodgers who takes the number one seed in the National League? And, you know, the number one seed for both of these leagues, a very important role to be in. The Angels appear like they're going to win it, but don't forget the Orioles could reel off a few wins and take that from them. Whoever gets those number one seeds, they face a team playing in that wild card matchup. So another team has to utilize their best pitcher just to get into the division series, and they're already a little more tired coming into that series. So you have a huge leg up. Getting that number one seed important, because in a division series, we've learned time and time again, anything can happen. In five games, you get a 1-0 lead, you get a 2-0 lead, you have some good starting pitching. It doesn't matter how good you were in the regular season. It only takes one game to swing everything.
Hey, it is our MLB update with our very own Andy Pondillo at Yahoo Sports Radio. We definitely want to hear from you tonight. Join us right now online at Twitter, at @eRadioSports. And from what I've been tracking, Andy, the teams that really stand out, I've got the Giants and the Dodgers. Who else stands out and is at the forefront of your mind?
I've had the Giants and Dodgers as standout teams in the NL West for a while. And, you know, the National League as a whole, I feel like the National League teams, the World Series is coming from the NL this year. I just feel like they're just built so much better for the playoffs. It doesn't mean anything can happen, because in the playoffs, if we learned anything in 2006 when the Cardinals won only 83 games, won a World Series,
yes.
Any of these teams can just go run the table out of nowhere. So I really like the way the NL is built. Even if you look at the wild card game as it shapes up right now, Pirates possibly versus the Giants, both of these teams, very good pitching. You got the playoff experience out of San Francisco. You could see that team running the table. You could see the Cardinals. It doesn't matter how bad their offense is, they always find a way to win. That's the thing about St. Louis. It doesn't matter who's on the team, who they lose. If they lose Albert Pujols, Alan Craig had a horrible year, they traded him. Matt Holliday, not quite the guy he is anymore. Carlos Beltran gone. They always find a way to stay at the top of the division. They always find a way to bring trouble to everybody in the postseason play. So you always got to look at the Cardinals. The front runner's got to be the Washington Nationals in the NL, because, you know, we've been on them since the start of the season. The most complete team up and down that lineup.
Everybody
can hit in that lineup. Bryce Harper, what can he do in the postseason? We don't know. You're going to have Jordan Zimmermann, an ace that's not talked about a lot, and then Steven Strasburg, a 1-2 that I would counter versus any team out there, a very complete team, a team that if you were to put them up against the Dodgers, who are a little more top-heavy, I feel like the Nationals have more depth in that National League, more of a team that can scrape together 3 and 4 runs versus a Clayton Kershaw versus a Greinke. Maybe that's asking for too much, but if there's a team that could do it, I think it would be the Washington Nationals, because they can score runs in a multitude of ways. American League, my obvious favorite is going to be the Angels every time. It's hard to find a real traditional hole on the Angels. It was the bullpen, but they spent a lot of money, made some trades, fixing that problem during the season, and it appears to have worked as they're nearing 100 games.
Okay, our very own Andy Pondillo with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, as we are going around the horn. Andy, tell all the listeners where they can go and check out your stuff online.
Yes, I talk a lot of Astros baseball and the season winding down, so we'll have our final season reports at climbingtowelshill.com.
Okay, so the Dodgers have been up and down, but could they still be perhaps your favorite?
They're not my favorite, but I do like the Dodgers in a postseason series. But at the same time, everyone's so evenly matched in the National League, it's hard to really pick a favorite this year. The Dodgers is probably the most top-heavy team of all of them, but what evens them out is that excellent pitching they have. Clayton Kershaw, Zach Greinke. I mean, that 1-2 is just absolutely filthy, not to mention Ryu. So they will pose a threat no matter who they face. Their batting order kind of scares me for postseason play. I think it's enough to get through a division series. I don't know if it's enough to get through the final two rounds. It's just the type of lineup they have is the type you sit and wait around for something explosive to happen. You wait for Yasiel Puig to go deep. Adrian Gonzalez is good of an RBI man as there is in the league. But after that, it's just, I don't know if it's good enough. The pitching's always going to keep them in the game. But I don't know if they have that offense that's going to score runs in a multitude of different ways. So when you engage in all these close games, you want to find an offense that can do that.
Okay, Andy Pondillo with us in studio tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We're going to step aside for a commercial break, and you stay close right there. And we will be right back with much more of Andy Pondillo as we go around the horn, our MLB update, and getting you ready for the playoffs. Yes, welcome back to Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. I am Academy, Elissa Walker Campbell. Always love hearing from you. You can email the show at Elissa@yahoosportsradio.com. Going one-on-one with our producer, Andy Pondillo at YSR. And we are getting you set and ready for the playoffs. They are just around the corner. It's hard to believe the regular season is already winding down for MLB. And so, Andy, you know, before we went to break, we were highlighting the Dodgers, and they have been up and down, but they perhaps could still be a favorite. But talk to me some more about Clayton Kershaw. I mean, it really seems like at this point in his career, he's a once-in-a-generation type player. He's incredible.
That is true, and I think he's the MVP of the National League. If you were to take Clayton Kershaw out of that rotation for the Dodgers, I would argue that they're a 500 team. They virtually win every single game they run Kershaw out onto the hill. 21 wins in less than 30 starts. Wow. It's unbelievable what he's done. And I remember when he came up, he was facing the Phillies in the playoffs back in the day. It was in 2008 when they first called him up. I believe they faced each other twice, 2008, 2009. Phillies took both of those series. This is his time to shine right here. They've been in the playoffs quite a bit during his tenure here, but the Dodgers haven't made it to that World Series. It's been a very long time since they've made it to that World Series. So this is his time to shine. This is one of the Dodgers' best opportunities. I don't know if I like the offense as a whole, but what offense do you really like as a whole in baseball right now? It's almost a dead ball era. This is an opportunity for him and Greinke to really go out there, shut the other teams down. And let's not forget Matt Kemp, a guy that everybody was kicking to the curb just a few months ago.
Yeah.
He's now a very dangerous hitter that lineup, and I'd argue probably the most consistent hitter for the Dodgers in the second half.
Well, going back just to Clayton Kershaw, I mean, did you know that he was going to be this good when he came into the league? What, when he came in, what, 2006?
He came in as 2008, and there's no way anyone could have imagined that. I mean, his first year, 4.26 ERA, and every year after that, it's been under 3. It seems like he gets even better every single season. You don't think he can get much better than what he's posted up. He came in during an era where Tim Lincecum was just lighting it up, and the Giants were that team in the NL West. We've seen that pendulum swing here, and I think it would be a lot of fun if these two teams could match up against each other. You know, Clayton Kershaw is the guy. He's just at another platform than everybody else. But, you know, if we could have him face off against Madison Bumgarner, Buster Posey, guys who have won two World Series championships, can he go in and shut down those experienced hands? I think that'd be a lot of fun. You know, the Dodgers, they've had that trouble before where they've matched up against a Philly team when Phillies were the team in the National League. Right now, you could argue that the Dodgers should be the team in the National League. It's their time to prove it to me and prove it to everybody else out there. They're not just a superstar team with a Clayton Kershaw and Adrian Gonzalez, that they are a true team, 25-man roster that can get through three rounds to postseason
okay,
play.
Okay, so we hit on Clayton. What has been the key for Matt to turn things around, Matt Kemp?
I don't know. It's kind of interesting. You know, we go about a year and a half, it feels like, that he hadn't done a lot, and a lot of injuries. Everybody's down on him. The Dodgers are looking to possibly trade him near the trade deadline. And, you know, he's complaining he's not in center field. I think they just started getting him some more regular at-bats, because when the year started, they had this weird ordeal in the outfield where they're alternating all their outfielders, Ethier, Puig, Crawford, Kemp. They didn't really know what they were going to do. I felt like Kemp finally got to settle in mid-season. They slotted him in that 4-5 slot in the lineup. And I feel like sometimes when guys come off injuries like he had, they just need to get some at-bats. They just need to build some confidence. It's not easy to play Major League Baseball every day, especially if you have an injury that involves your legs. Probably a guy that at some point needs to be a designated hitter. Not quite there yet. I think that moving him to a corner outfield slot, maybe where he isn't running as much in center, definitely helped. But he's a professional hitter. When you're a professional hitter, you're a superstar hitter, you're a guy that's been given an ability that less than 1% of baseball players have. You have to think eventually he's going to figure it out, because Matt Kemp's not a bum out there. He keeps himself in decent shape. I figured he was going to figure it out. I wasn't sure if we'd ever see the Matt Kemp of old. Maybe not with the speed, but we're starting to see with the bat.
Andy Pondillo with us a few more minutes at YSR, the Big E Sports Show, on this Friday night. We're usually talking football, but I'm having a good time conversation, talking some baseball. So who are your playoff dark horses at this point?
Well, you ought to look at the Giants. I'm going to, you know, I know I said the Giants a lot so far in this show. They're still going to have to get through a one-game playoff. Looks like it's going to be against the Pirates, or it's going to be against the Cardinals. You imagine they're going to run Madison Bumgarner out in that playoff game. If the Giants get in, they're a team you do not want in the postseason, because just look at the experience they have. You have the World Series champions there in 2010, 2012, and what is it? Every 2 years, the Giants are good, so that means they're due for another World Series here in 2014, if you're going by the logic. Madison Bumgarner, now their ace, an absolute stud in postseason play. They don't have their guy, Matt Cain. That's going to hurt, but they also have some other pitchers that can get by. Petit has been a guy that was a relief pitcher early in the year. Now he's starting, has shown some good stuff. And then don't forget about the cagey old veteran, Tim Hudson, a guy that you can slot in at number three. They just lost their leadoff man for the rest of the year, Pagan. That's going to hurt them greatly. They have Hunter Pence there at the top. They have the experience in Posey batting the three-hole, Sandoval. There's a lot of weaknesses on this team, I feel like, compared to maybe their 2012 team. But you got to remember, in 2010, they won with a very poor offense as well. And right now in the National League, there just isn't a lot of good offense to go around. I look at the Giants, a team that can roll the dice. I look at the Cardinals. I think it's hard to call the Cardinals a dark horse, but based on their offensive production this year, I guess you could. But let's not also forget about on the American League side, Kansas City Royals, if they're able to sneak their way in postseason play, I feel like you always got to watch out for the Cinderella team. You always got to watch out for the team that has something a lot to play for. That city will be absolutely crazy, much like you've seen last year in Pittsburgh for a chance to play in postseason. I mean, the last time they were in, the internet wasn't even around the last time they were in the playoffs.
That has been a long time. So you highlight some potential dark horses, but what are your thoughts, Andy, on the format of the two wild card teams? I know that you're pretty passionate about this.
See, I was not a fan.
Tell me why.
When it first started, because a lot of times the wild card awards a team that's in a tough division. We've seen a lot of times where there's a division that has a 103-win team, and then another team wins 93 games, but it puts them in a wild card position just because they're unlucky and they got put in that tough division. And sometimes they are actually the second-best team in the whole league, but they have to get in through the wild card. So now the way this sets up is maybe you'd see a 93-win, a 92-win team get in a wild card position, and then the second wild card wins 86 games. Then they go to a one-game playoff, a 162-game season decided by one game. Anything can happen in one game in baseball. Baseball is meant to be series. It's not meant to be one game. It works for football. I don't know if it works for baseball, but you know it's going to be exciting anyway. I'm going to watch the one-game playoffs. I'm going to be on the edge of my seat loving all the drama and action. But I know if my Astros had won 92 games in a season and they finished in second place and then got knocked out by an 86-win team that probably shouldn't be in the playoff conversation, I'm going to be very upset. Not going to happen this year, but I imagine at some point it will happen.
Andy Pondillo from Yahoo Sports Radio, our producer of the Big E Sports Show. Always a pleasure to have you on. Thank you.
It was fun as always.
Much more straight ahead. Stay close. Okay, the football conversation continues at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. We are getting ready to go inside the huddle and discuss the play-at-all-costs culture of the NFL, and we will shine the spotlight on Ray Lucas, who played seven seasons in the NFL as a quarterback, a special teams player, most notably with the New York Jets. Joining us tonight from New York is veteran sports journalist and author who teamed up with Ray Lucas and co-authored his new book. It is titled Ray Lucas, Under Pressure, How Playing Football Almost Cost Me Everything and Why I Do It All Over Again. Welcome in, David. It's nice to have you with us.
Thanks for having me. It's a catchy title, kind of a timely story, and Ray was a great guy to tell the story with.
Absolutely, and there's no doubt. I mean, it was a cautionary and an enlightening memoir and a must-read, and really does, I would say, David, provide the football fans an uncensored look into the true culture of the NFL. I've got to ask you right off the top, was your goal of this book to perhaps get better health care for NFL players when their game is over?
Well, I mean, I think that's certainly, you know, one of the hopes. Really, I think, and the reason why Ray was so comfortable telling his story was he does want to generate awareness that, listen, there are a lot of hot-button issues going on with the NFL right now, a lot of things involving violent behavior, and while those are truly important for the NFL to deal with and maybe even become a leader in trying to resolve the issue of domestic violence, you know, the inherent problem with football is the violence that is committed every single play, player on player. And that's the nature of the sport. And the problem is that the toll taken on these guys who we cheer on and we root for and we follow year after year, the toll taken on these guys, when they're done with the game, fans forget them, but they live with this stuff for the rest of their lives. And it's tough. It is a tough way to earn a living. And I think Ray's entire reason for wanting to share his story as openly as he did was, you know, to let players know, I mean, even high school and college players know, hey, you're not going through what you're going through alone. most people are going through this and seek and find help that exists out there. That's really the key, I think, to almost save players from the self-imposed silence that, they've been living with all their whole careers.
You know, that was interesting, too. I listened to an interview from Ray, and he said, everybody sees Sunday, but nobody sees Monday. I mean, he really did pull back the curtain and share some very difficult things that he had to go through as a player and a person.
Yeah, and that really is it. I mean, everybody follows football. The whole country, the world follows the NFL on Sundays. And no one really knows what these guys go through on Monday and Tuesday to get back on the practice field on Wednesday. I mean, the amazing thing, we know how competitive these guys are. We know how tough they are. We know what they would do to get out on the field for Sunday. But what these guys have to go through to just get back on the practice field to earn and keep their job and just to get reps and not lose, you know, the 53rd spot on the roster. I mean, it's incredible the toll, the willingness to accept the toll that it takes for that life. And again, the thing about Ray, yeah, this is not, he was not Peyton Manning. He was not Tom Brady. Most guys in the NFL have a career like or shorter than Ray's. And, you know, we forget that as football fans. We forget to see that these, you know, there are human beings who are suffering for the opportunity to play in the NFL. And every single one of them would probably tell you, it's worth it. I would do it again. Ray said the exact same thing. He would do it all again, even knowing what he knows now.
You know, David, I mean, Ray, he shared with you and acknowledged just the numerous challenges and obstacles that he faced at his position. But what was the biggest challenge that he did face as an NFL quarterback?
Well, I mean, I think first he had to earn a shot. You know, he was the precursor to today's, you know, dual threat quarterback. He was a runaround quarterback, a very athletic quarterback. He had a great arm, but his legs were part of his game. So he had to first get a shot. And the shot that he was given by Bill Parcells came not as a quarterback. Parcells recognized that there was a football player here. And I'm going to find a job for him. He didn't know what it was going to be. He said, Ray, trust me, I don't know what you're going to do, but I'm going to get a spot for you. And he put him at wide receiver. You know, Ray was undrafted out of Rutgers. The Patriots, you know, gave him a shot at receiver, and Ray admits openly he was the worst receiver on the roster. He was terrible. He earned a shot to play special teams. He was on the field, you know, on special teams when Desmond Howard had that, you know, that legendary return in the Super Bowl when it was Packers Patriots that year. He was one of the guys who missed the opportunity to chase down Desmond Howard. You know, not a lot of guys wind up being a starting quarterback after their career began on special teams. And he was one of the gunners. I mean, these guys, that was when the wedge was still legal. I mean, it was just, you know, you think about what these guys do on special teams, and if anybody really thought about what that job description was, no one in their right mind would take that job. It's a crazy job. But they do it to get a shot. And, you know, the thing that really impressed me, or the thing that I didn't quite realize, was, you know, when he was on the Patriots, you know, and they had to play in the playoffs to get to the Super Bowl, Cordell Stewart and Mark Brunell, two mobile quarterbacks. Ray got a chance to run scout team quarterback with them to prepare the Patriots defense for what runaround quarterbacks looked like in that era, because nobody saw them. And it was in the chance to kind of play the role of Cordell Stewart and Mark Brunell that Parcells kind of saw, you know what, maybe there's something we can do with you. And that was kind of the start of how he had earned a shot at playing quarterback. But very few guys make it to the starter's role as a quarterback after starting on special teams. I mean, that was really the thing that I had probably not realized about his career.
We're visiting with David Seigerman right now at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show, author of the new book about Ray Lucas. It is titled Under Pressure, How Playing Football Almost Cost Me Everything, Why I Would Do It All Over Again. And I'm glad you bring up Bill Parcells. I'd like for you to talk a little bit about his relationship with his coach, because when he was cut from the Patriots, it was Bill Parcells that showed up at his apartment and said, come on.
Yeah, he actually, they called the next day, you know, when Parcells gave him the shot. You know, first of all, let me say this, a lot of people, you know that there is this, you know, brand of NFL player that's a Parcells guy. They're always referred to as Parcells guys, and I covered the Jets a lot when Parcells was with the Jets, and you'd go into the locker room after a Parcells press conference, and you'd hear guys like Ray Lucas or Curtis Martin or, you know, Keyshawn Johnson, you would hear Pepper Johnson, you know, you would hear these guys echoing exactly what Parcells had just said in the press conference, and you got a sense that he liked to build his team with a certain kind of guy, the Parcells guy. And Ray was certainly one of those. They had the Jersey connection. You know, their approach to playing the game was very similar. They're both very, you know, candid, free talkers. And when Parcells left to go to the Jets and Pete Carroll came in to New England, you know, Pete looked at Ray's skill set and, you know, and said, I don't think we have a spot for you on this team. I don't see you being good enough to play quarterback in the NFL. And he cut Ray after a couple of exhibition games. And that happens all the time. That's, you know, it was nothing personal. It just happens all the time in the NFL. And Parcells called Ray the next morning and basically said, you know, what happened? Ray said, they never gave me a shot, coach. And Parcells said, there's a ticket waiting for you at the airport. We're getting ready to get on a plane to go to our next exhibition game. If you miss the plane, don't bother coming. Plane leaves in an hour. And he's like, I'm there. And he drove on the shoulder and packed his, you know, everything, packed his entire life away in, you know, in 10 seconds and earned the shot with the Jets, where he stayed for the rest of Parcells' tenure there.
And, of course, Bill Parcells, he was the one coach that saw something in Ray Lucas that others didn't. I have to ask you, I mean, when you talk about Ray Lucas and his career, how many concussions did he have throughout his 7 years in the NFL?
Well, it's funny because he said he was never told he had a concussion. He had 19 dingers, or 19 burners, but, you know, they didn't call them concussions then. He knows he had 19 of probably what would be classified today as a concussion. And, you know, when Ray and his agent and I started first talking about doing this book was, you know, a year and a half, 2 years ago, and it was right as all, like, you know, the concussion issue was coming to the forefront of the NFL. And, you know, the issue for Ray, concussions, oddly, he had 19 of them, were not the problem that he faced in the NFL. It was everything else. It was, you know, these guys come away with hurt necks and shoulders and backs and knees and thumbs and toes and everything. Concussions were a problem for him. And ultimately, he's afraid, will continue to become a problem for him as he gets older, as it is for a lot of guys. But again, it's the full package of aches and pains and breaks and bumps and bruises that, you know, that just wear these guys down.
Right, and he had a total of 14 surgeries. I have to ask you, David, when did the painkillers start getting out of control?
Well,
what season?
Know, it really became out of control for him. You know, first he had a back issue when he first left the game, and he had a neck issue. And he was able to get the back fixed, and the neck didn't really creep up for a couple of years when he was out. And that's the other problem that these guys face, is that when the league-issued insurance runs its course, when it lapses, it used to be 5 years. I'm not exactly sure if that's still what it is. You know, a lot of these long-term effects haven't begun to surface while these guys are still covered by the you know, the NFL insurance. So after, we're right around the time when his insurance was lapsing, about 5 years out of the game, you know, his neck was creating such problems from then. The neck injury is what actually, you know, cost him his career. He sneezed on the sidelines of a Ravens practice and went down, and he, you know, he lost feeling in his legs of everything. And the Ravens said, you know, we can't keep you on the roster. I mean, you're a sneeze away from being paralyzed. And it really hadn't manifested itself for several years. Ultimately, you know, if you think about where the painkiller addiction comes from, it comes, I think, from a couple of places. First, you know, these guys, especially in that era, they took shots to practice. You know, they took Toradol shots to get out on the field for practice on Wednesday, let alone, you know, to you know, take painkillers for game day. So it wasn't anything these guys ever thought twice about, because their teams were, I don't want to say enabling, but I guess they were. They were basically making it possible for them to numb the pain to go out on the field and practice. Then the problem was, you know, the pain couldn't get fixed. He couldn't afford the surgery that would repair the damage done to his neck. And, you know, the longer you live with a deteriorating condition and mounting pain, you know, he had nowhere else to turn. He was able to, you know, he's a savvy guy. He was able to kind of beat the system and find ways to get painkillers whenever he needed it, you know, and that became an addictive behavior. And he was taking, you know, he said at the worst, like 1,400 different pills a month. There's a list in the book of the kinds of things that he kind of accounted for when he finally was able to get medical help. And he showed up, and the doctor said, "You can't possibly have taken all this stuff." He's like, "That Exactly. I took every one of those things on that list.
Hey, David Seigerman has been with us tonight at Yahoo Sports Radio, the Big E Sports Show. Veteran sports journalist, of course, has just released the book about Ray Lucas. It is titled Under Pressure. And I have to tell you, it is a harrowing look inside the play-at-all-cost culture of the NFL. David, you're a fabulous guest. We absolutely want to extend the invitation once again. And we will hopefully catch up with you in the future real soon. Thank you.
Great. Thanks for your time today.
Absolutely. Much more straight ahead. Stay close at YSR, the Big E Sports Show. Okay, we're rolling right along inside the Quicken Loans studios at Yahoo Sports Radio. And in our final segment tonight, we're now going to focus our attention on the Big Ten Conference and Michigan football. And no doubt, they have struggled mightily this season with a number of disappointing losses and being overwhelmed at home by Utah and getting shut out at Notre Dame. But right now, we want to walk down memory lane, relive some of those good old days in Wolverine history. And with us tonight is Dr. Frank Lieberman. He is the author of the new book, Bo's Warriors, Bo Schembechler, and the Transformation of Michigan Football. It's nice to have you with us. Thank you so much, Frank.
Thank you, Big E.
Hey, I know we're going to have some fun, and we're going to delve into your book here just momentarily, but I know you have followed Michigan close throughout the years. Just kind of give us some insight on how the script is unfolding so far this year, because I think the fans are a little bit restless and kind of disappointed.
I would rather talk about the past than this year.
Well, we can dive
right, if you know what I mean.
Absolutely, we can dive right in there. Yeah. You're not going to give me like a quick takeaway on your thoughts on how the season's playing out so far?
Well, so far, this is very interesting because I'm going to go back. Michigan is 2-2 playing Minnesota for the Brown Jug, the infamous
right.
Brown Jug.
Sure.
Now the 69 book. The team where Bo and Woody started their 10-year battle, Michigan was 2-2 going into the Minnesota game in 1969. And in fact, were behind in the first half 9-7. Okay? And Bo came in and talked to them and said, basically, you guys are better than you think, and don't let this opportunity pass. So Michigan scored all these touchdowns, four more touchdowns in the second half. Minnesota didn't do any. And from then on, they annihilated Illinois, Iowa, and they just took over. And so when they went into the Ohio State game, in fact, at the Iowa game just before they were they blew out Iowa 51, or I forget. I'd have to look in the book to
figure out
the score. Mm-hmm. But the player said, let's go to Columbus now. Let's play Ohio State now. Ohio State was the number one ranked team at the time and had 22 straight victories. And not only that, Woody thought this was perhaps his greatest team. He had Jack Tatum, the assassin, among others. Anyway, so Michigan is 3-2. And for the next 2.5 years in their season play, we're 24-1. So we pointed this out to Coach Brady Hoke at one of the Michigan alumni functions this week and said, okay, and also to Dave Brandon, who's the athletic director, that do you remember Michigan was 2-2 going into Minnesota? And the season got turned around. Not only that, that started the transformation of Michigan football.
Well, so, Frank, I
so
have
this
to...
This weekend is critical.
It is critical, and I love your optimism, and perhaps they can return. I mean, I think of that, you know, the first season for Brady Hoke. I mean, 11-2 in that debut campaign. I mean,
yes.
They can still turn it around. Well, let's move ahead. Let's talk about and relive some of those memories of head coach Bo Schembechler as a head coach. I mean, he was amazing. His ability to lead so many things, a disciplinarian. He was loving. He was gruff. He had the heart of a champion. How would you describe him as a head coach and why he was so effective?
Well, first of all, he inherited a group of outstanding athletes, such as Frank Gusick, Tom Darden, who had an outstanding pro career, Jim Brandstetter, Fritz Seifert, Mike Keller, who had a pro career, Tom Curtis, who had a pro career, Jim Betts, Reggie McKenzie, who had an outstanding pro career, along with Coach Gary Moeller. So these were all recruits from Bump, Bump Elliott recruited these guys. So Bo actually had to eliminate all these players who showed up for spring practice. He basically said, you do it my way or it's the highway. And so he said, I can't work with all these players. There's too many. So he got rid of them by these brutal practices. In fact, Fritz Seifert, one of the players in the book, said, Bump wouldn't have us do some of these things because it disrespected the individual. So the players just couldn't stand Bo at first. Couldn't. Actually, some probably hated him at first. And it wasn't until after their careers ended that they began to love him and understood what it was all about. Let me give you one illustration. Reggie McKenzie, who's All-American, All-Pro, College Hall of Fame, who was infamous in helping O.J. set the rushing record back then for Buffalo. So Bo came to Reggie at the end of the 1972, the end of Reggie's career at Michigan, and said, I'm coaching with Bear Bryant in Lubbock, Texas for this All-Star game. I'd like you to join us. And Reggie politely said, no, coach, I'm unable to do that. Reggie told me, I'm through with this guy. I don't want him. I'm done with him. I don't want anything to do with him. Yet, a couple of years later, Reggie formed his foundation, which is still going on. And he came, who do you think he came to? He came to Bo.
Mm-hmm.
And Bo helped him out in providing Michigan materials for him, like footballs and things like that, for him to get his foundation started. He said, yeah, I hated him at first, almost quit the team, but I love him. I love that man. So transformation not only of Michigan football, but of the character of these individuals. Their character was outstanding.
We have been zeroing in on Michigan football and highlighting a new book that is out by Dr. Frank Lieberman. It is titled Bo's Warriors, Bo Schembechler, and the Transformation of Michigan Football. Just quickly, Frank, where can the listeners go and get a copy of it?
They can get a copy of it through the publisher, Triumph Books, through Barnes & Noble, through Amazon, the usual social media stuff. And I'm going to put up a link at some point on Facebook. They can buy it through me, get an autographed copy through me. That'll be down the road. But right now, if they want to get it right now, Triumph, Barnes & Noble, Amazon, the usual.
That, of course, was Dr. Frank Lieberman, author of Bo's Warriors. We want to take time to thank all of our outstanding guests and lineup. David Sigerman, of course, the new book that's out on Ray Lucas. Nick Eatman, the beat writer for DallasCowboys.com. Our very own Sean Salisbury. Andy Pondillo, our outstanding producer right here. And Jason Peter with our weekly Under the Helmet segment. I'm Elissa Walker-Campbell, reminding each and every one of you, don't you dare drink and drive. We'll see you next weekend for the biggest, the best in sports right here at Yahoo Sports Radio and YahooSportsRadio.com.